Vayikra, as we know, focuses on all of the minutiae, all of the details of how we are supposed to properly offer karbanos in the Beis HaMikdash. And one of the important halachos that we read about in this week's parsha, Parshas Tzav, is regarding machshava, regarding a kohen's thought when the karban is actually being offered. So we're told he has to have in mind that he's offering it l'shem Hashem, that he's doing it for the right reasons, and not only does he have to make sure to have a positive thought while he's offering the karban, but he also has to make sure not to have any negative thoughts. So the Gemara learns from the Psukim in this week's Parsha that he's not allowed to have in mind that he's going to offer it chutz lizmano or chutz limkomo. He's not going to bring it outside of the confines of where it's allowed to be eaten, and he's not going to keep it longer than it's supposed to be. And from here, the Gemara learns that not only is the kohen not allowed to think that, but if he does think that, the karban becomes invalidated. It is now referred to as pigul, and one who consumes such a karban is chayiv kari. So it seems to be a very important halacha that is discussed. This is worthy of our attention, not only because it's a good thing to learn about karbanos every so often, but it's also worthy because the Shulchan Aruch quotes earlier Rishonim who write that this should really be translated into the modern day form of karbanos, which as we know is tefillah. So we daven today, and the Gemara says that tefillah is b'makom ha-karbanos. Tefillah stands in the place of our ability to offer karbanos today. And therefore, the Rishonim say that the same rule that would apply to the karbanos themselves apply and should also be relevant to the halachos that govern our tefillah as well. And therefore, the Shulchan Aruch says in Ichos Tefillah that while one is in the midst of davening, they are not allowed to have their mind wander. They're not allowed to think about other things. They're supposed to be concentrating solely on the tefillah, why we're offering the tefillah, what the kavanos hamilos actually is, what the words mean, and you're not supposed to have your mind in other places. Some achronim say that what it means is chutz lizmano or chutz limkomo. Very often we stand in a shul and our mind is going to be on a totally different location. It's going to be on our offices, on our dealings, on our business, on the trip we have to take, on different things that might be on our minds. And there the achronim say one has to think carefully about the fact that while one is davening, there's a problem with having a machshava that is something that will distract you, that will take away from your ability to think about the tefillah itself. In the Sefer Kav HaYashar, which is a very important Musar Sefer, written a couple of hundred years ago by Reb Shmuel Kardinover. He was a great Talmud Chacham who lived in the 1600s, and he was one of the early Achronim. He was a contemporary of the Shach. I think he sat on the same Bezdin as the Shach did. So Reb Shmuel Kardinover wrote a Sefer that is very well known, that we refer to as the Kav HaYashar, which is all about different Musar ideas. So here he describes his perspectives on tefillah, and he says the following. Isa b'Yerushalmi, he quotes a passage from the Talmud Yerushalmi. Ha'omid l'hispalel, somebody who stands up to daven, sarach l'hashvos es raglav. The Yerushalmi says when one davens, they have to have their feet next to one another. Pligi trein amaran. So he quotes that the Yerushalmi has a disagreement. Why do we have to have our feet connected to each other? Why do they need to be together? So one opinion in the Yerushalmi is, chad amar kimalachim. One opinion is, the same way the angels, the Navi tells us, raglehem regel yishara, they only have one leg, so we are supposed to be like the angels, where we only have one leg, so we put our feet together. And the other opinion is that it's supposed to be like the Kohanim. When the Kohanim do avoda, they're supposed to stand with their feet together, or when they duchen, they're supposed to do that, so therefore we assume that this is the way we go about our tefillah. Says the Kav HaYashar v'nira, it seems to me, te'elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim heim. Both opinions are accepted, and both of them are relevant in understanding what our purpose in tefillah is. Why? Ki ha'tefillah hi b'makom ha'karban. He says, primarily, our tefillah is supposed to be in the place of the karbanos that we don't have the ability to offer. Al-Kain, he says, therefore, tzarech lasos atzmo ki'ilu hu kohen. Therefore, we should try and act like the Kohanim act, and therefore we keep our feet together, which is supposed to mimic that behavior of the Kohanim who did the service in the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore he says, not only does it mean you should put your feet together, but also he extends it, ma avodas hakohen hi psula b'machshava zara, just like a Kohen who does the avoda and who gets engaged in something in the Beis HaMikdash is not allowed to have his mind somewhere else, so too he says, kach tzarech ha'adam mishas ha'tfila. That needs to be our perspective when we daven as well. Shelo lachshov shum machshava zara, that our minds should not be distracted, should not be placed onto other things. Kedei shelo yase karbano bepigul, in order that you will not invalidate or nullify your tefillah. As we know, we just mentioned the psukim in our parsha tell us that when a carbon is offered and your mind is somewhere else, that will invalidate the carbon. You're not allowed to consume such a carbon. You're not allowed to offer that. And so too writes the Kav HaYashar, that will be the same when it comes to our tefillah. V'lo yomar ha'adam. Don't think that when I talk about one's mind wandering, that it means a hirur aveira. Don't think it just means that during davening you're not allowed to think about something that you're not normally allowed to think about. Says the Kav HaYashar, that is not correct. Ela afilu hirur masa umatan. Our regular habits, our instinct is that we think about our business, that we think about that which is on our minds, who's driving carpool today, or whatever it might be, whatever stage of life you're up to. So he says, even to think about those kinds of ideas, which normally we certainly are allowed to think about, but he says during the tefillah, one has to make sure that they act like a malach, where you have nothing else on your mind. You have a clear head, just to understand and to think about who you're standing before, what it is that you're engaged in, what it is that you're doing. And therefore, he says, both of these opinions really are relevant. Number one, we stand with our feet together to be like the malachim, where they have nothing else that is distracting them. And we also stand with our feet together to be like the kohanim. I remember my father told me once in the name of Rav Soloveitchik that he suggested maybe the reason why we stand with our feet together to act like a malach is to show that when a person only has one leg, you see somebody who one leg for whatever reason is not working, you can't really do anything. So we show the Ribbono Shel Olam, we submit ourselves and we show him, when we stand before you, it's as if we only have one leg. We cannot even move, we cannot even do anything without your assistance. And that is why we offer ourselves in tefillah to him, to gain that assistance from him, in order that we should be able to progress, that we should be able to have a life going forward. The Sefer Achinuch writes, when he talks about tefillah, that perhaps this is an added level of meaning to the pasuk in one of the Aseres Hadibras, where we're told, "Lo sasuni ti Elohei chesef Elohei zahav." You're not allowed to make gods that are made of gold and silver. Says the Sefer Achinuch, what it means is if a person, while they daven, is thinking about the gold and the silver, the figurative gold and silver that one has in their life, and all the different things that they're engaged in with regard to the monetary matters of life, says the Sefer Achinuch, that perhaps would be a violation of, you're making God into a gold and silver. You're not concentrating on God himself. You're busy distracting yourself and thinking about that which really does not pertain to your tefillah per se. So it's very shocking that the Talmud Yerushalmi also shares with us, you know, you hear such a thing from the Kav HaYashar and you say the Shulchan Aruch writes you're supposed to always focus and concentrate. It's hard for us to do that. It's not so easy to think and to concentrate solely and focus our attention on the tefillah that's before us. And in fact, you'll see in the Yerushalmi itself, it shares a number of stories of the greatest Amoraim who shared their frustration that they also were not able to keep focus throughout the entire duration of tefillah. So you'll say, oh, no, they were just saying on their own level. They weren't distracted like we were. The Yerushalmi actually says very practical stories that I think are ones that would speak to us. The Yerushalmi talks about, and it's interesting to note that this is what the Yerushalmi shares, but the Yerushalmi says that Shmuel, when he was in the middle of davening, he says, Manisi Efrochim Mitfila, while I was davening, I was counting eggs. He couldn't get his attention off. There were eggs in front of him, and he was just busy doing that. And one of the other Talmidei Chachamim said that whenever he was davening, he would count the bricks that were in front of him on the wall. He would count the Shuros HaBinyan, how many layers there were of bricks. So you say to yourself, you know, the Amoraim also had difficulty concentrating once in a while, and this is why I believe they share this with us. So much so that Rab Matanya, who's also one of the Amoraim quoted there in the Yerushalmi, says, I have to unfortunately confess that sometimes while I'm davening, I don't know how it happens, but my body by itself just bows down at Modim. I don't know how I got there. And I have to say, once in a while, I feel the same thing. You know, you get up to Modim, and you're wondering, how did I get to this part of davening? And I'm supposed to bow, I just instinctively bow, but I'm not really considering what it is that I'm bowing for, what I'm bowing about. But you should know that the Yerushalmi tells us this is not something that started in our generation. This has been a very old struggle, an age-old difficulty with really concentrating our efforts on tefillah in the proper way that we are supposed to. I believe that the Dubna Magid has the following mashal. I do not recall exactly where in his svarim it is. I couldn't find it this morning. But the Dubna Magid, I believe, has this mashal where he talks about the Kafri Echad. He talks about, I think that means the simpleton, who was from a very simple village, didn't really have an appreciation for the big world out there. And one time he happens to go trying to sell his goods. So he ends up in a big city, and he's trying to get the members of the big city to buy his goods. So he comes there, and he goes to sleep at night in some little inn, and all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, he hears tremendous chaos, unbelievable hysteria. Everybody's out in the streets and screaming and yelling. And he goes outside and he asks, what's happening? So somebody said, look over there, there's a big fire. The whole house is engulfed in flames and it's being consumed, and there's danger to the whole community, to the whole neighborhood. So he's watching to see how they're going to put the fire out. In my community, they don't know how to put out fires. When a fire breaks out, the whole house burns down. We don't know how to deal with this. So he's wondering, what am I going to pick up? What direction am I going to learn from this big, famous city, how they deal with fires? And he sees that right in the middle of town, somebody comes out with a big pot, and he's banging on the pot, and all of a sudden, 5 minutes later, the fire's out. So he's amazed. And he says, this is incredible that they figured out such a secret. All you have to do is stand in the middle of the city and bang on the pot, and all of a sudden the fire is out in the next 5 minutes. So a couple of months go by, and he's back home in his little simple village again, and one night, in the middle of the night, the same story happens. A fire breaks out in somebody's house, and there's tremendous hysteria, and everyone's nervous, and chaos in the streets, and everyone's screaming, get out of the homes, the whole community's going to burn down. He says, no, stop being so hysterical, I learned the secret. I know how we put out fires, nothing to be concerned about. Everybody calm down. He goes right in the middle of the city, he takes a big pot, he starts hitting it with a spoon, and all of a sudden, the whole house is consumed, the whole house is burnt down, the fire is not put out, and he can't understand what happened. How come in the other town, when I was there, as soon as the man stood in the middle of town and started banging on the pot, the fire went out? Here, I tried to do the same thing. I learned from the experts, and it seems not to be working. And the answer that the people shared with him is, obviously, that is not what put the fire out. What he did was, he was trying to alarm the members of the community who know how to put out fires. So the way that you learn to do it is, you stand in the highest place in the town, you bang with the spoon on the pot. Everybody understands that that means you're supposed to come with your pots of water, and then together we'll all put out the fire, we will all collaborate to do what has to be done. He says, if you just stand there in the middle of town and bang on the pot, nothing's going to happen. You have to explain to people that that means there's a code word for something else. Said the Dubna Magid, so often we come to Davin and we do the same thing. You stand in the middle of Slachlanu and you're just banging on the pot. And he says, you stand in the middle of town and you see you're banging and you're bowing down and you're standing up and you're sitting down, and we're doing all kinds of different motions in the middle of davening, and we're wondering, how come I don't have what I asked for? How could it be? I asked God to provide me with this and I asked him to provide me with that. He said, we're as foolish sometimes as that individual who stands right in the middle of town square trying to put out a fire just by banging on the pot, says the Dubna Magid, obviously without the follow-up, obviously without doing something real, that is not going to really accomplish the goal that we are trying to reach. There's a story that's told about the great tzaddik, the Taz, who has a commentary on Yerideya, where the Taz writes, he doesn't write, but it is documented in the, apparently there was a history book that was written by the town of Lvov, where the Taz was the Rav. So the story goes that the Taz had a worn-out talis that he wore for many, many years. And a number of women of the community felt it's not really respectful that our rabbi wears a talis that's so worn out, that's so yellow already. So they decided they were going to gather together to try to put together a few pennies and buy him a new talis. And they made this big presentation to him that they wanted to honor him with the new talis that they saved up money for. So he said, I thank you very much, and I appreciate the very kind gesture. However, he said, I'm keeping my old talis, and I'm going to continue to daven with it. And even though it looks a little bit strange, and it's worn out, and it's yellow, but I'm going to keep it anyway. Why? Said the Taz, because this talis, when I get to the Olam HaEmes, this talis is going to be made on me. It's going to give testimony about me that there was never a machshava zara b'tfila shmona esrei. That never once in my life when I daven with this talis did I ever have my mind distracted and thinking about anything else. Now, that is the great Taz. It is not something any of us can relate to, I would imagine. It's hard. How can you have your attention never being diverted while you're davening an entire shmona esrei? And therefore, let's just close before mincha with a comment that the Chafetz Chaim makes, where he tries to address this difficulty, and he says, look, we understand that it's hard for us to concentrate throughout the duration of a tefillah. Tefillah sometimes feels distant from us, the Ribono Shel Olam feels like he's in a different world, and he's very far removed from us, and it's hard for us to really focus and to concentrate our attention for the entire span of a Shmona Esrei, for the entire span of a davening. However, writes the Chafetz Chaim as follows, Shamati Mishem Gon Echad. Chafetz Chaim says, he heard from a great tzaddik. He doesn't identify who it is, but he says the following. What is a person supposed to do if you get to the end of Shemona Esrei and you realize, I really have not been paying attention at all. I have no idea how I got here. Sometimes we flip the pages and you finally get to the end and you say, wow, how did all this happen? They say a story about the Chassidish Rebbe who once went over to a yid in the middle of davening and he said, Shalom Aleichem, Bruchim Abayim, it's nice to see you. He says, what do you mean? I've been here for weeks. He says, no, it seems that you were just coming on a trip from Berlin or somewhere else. Your mind seemed to be everywhere else in the world other than in our shul. Sometimes we go through davening and we have that sense. How did I get to this page in the Chumash? How did I get to this page in the Siddur? Says the Chafetz Chaim, the answer is, for such a person, you tell them the following. There was once a young girl who went to sell her items, her goods, in the local market. And she has vegetables, whatever it may have been. And she's sitting there and people are buying and she's selling. But then somebody, a bandit, a thief, comes along and starts snatching away from her basket. He starts taking away some of the oranges, some of the apples, some of the vegetables, and she's crying hysterically. Here, her family sent her out. They entrusted her with the goods, and she's going to come home with nothing. He's stealing everything. So she's just crying there hysterically, laying on the floor, and uncontrollably, she doesn't know what to do. And finally, a wise man passes by, and he says, "You fool, this man is sitting there taking things out of your basket. Why don't you take whatever's left and just start running away? You should also grab for yourself. Don't let him grab everything. You start grabbing and you'll have whatever you're able to get, whatever you're able to keep for yourself, he won't be able to get his hands on." Writes the Chafetz Chaim, that should be the perspective as well. Sometimes our attention might be diverted and we cannot pay attention to the entire duration of Shemona Esrei. You get to the end and you say, "How did I get here? What happened?" Well, says the Chafetz Chaim, so somebody grabbed away a number of brachas of Shemona Esrei, a number of pieces of the davening, and you lost the opportunity. Okay, so they were stolen. But don't let him take the last bracha that you have left. If you wake up at the end, at least allow yourself to connect with the Ribono Shel Olam in the last moment of Shemona Esrei, that you still can do it before you take your 3 steps back. It's never too late, said the Chafetz Chaim. So for most of us, we don't have the ability to concentrate like the Taz and say that our Talis can be made on us one day, that we never had any diversion of our attention at all throughout the davening. That's not something that is realistic of a goal for most of us. But, writes the Chafetz Chaim, what is realistic is for a person to realize at least grab a few fruits, a few vegetables for yourself, and don't allow for the thief, for the bandit, to take every last bit of your expression with the Ribono Shel Olam away from you. Allow yourself to connect, even in the smallest of ways, to the Ribono Shel Olam as you go through the tefillah, as you have that opportunity to daven to him.